See the great stairway above. The master is coming. Watch. At long last, it seems like almost a year, the master has returned. Is he there?
Of wine, Jeff. You do like wine, don't you?
As long as it's not laced with any extra exotic seasonings.
How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm still here. And how are you?
Still here.
You sound great.
Well, listening to the news, I thought of something that we just have to have in the next contest.
Mm-hmm.
That is a form that all of those who enter the contest must sign and promise that upon winning, if they win, they must promise not to start a riot, not to burn cars, and not to break windows of merchants in their excitement.
That's downright unsportsmanship-like, isn't it?
I know. I can never grasp that.
I don't get it.
That's why we stay in the Castle Steiger.
You should. Keep the gate closed. Now, tomorrow night is Halloween. The gate, of course, will come down and the door will be open to certain young visitors. But I must say that I think that the indication that we need to take from what happened in San Francisco and what has happened many other times before is that people, how do I say this delicately, over-relate to their sports teams,
just a little.
It becomes a part of their being, and I'm surprised there aren't more suicides when people see their team lose.
Yeah,
Maybe there are, and we don't hear about it. I don't know.
No, and it may happen. It may happen, and people may not know the cause. But, you know, it's just when you're happy, you're really happy.
Well,
something that you wanted to take place has occurred, so you go out and smash someone's window or tip over somebody's car and set it on fire.
True happiness.
True happiness. And start a riot, throw rocks at police. I mean, this is, there must be more civilized ways to express one's happiness.
Well, like, I think.
Like laughing, maybe.
We're degenerating.
Or saying, yay, we won.
No, that's too namby-pamby.
You've
got to be macho about winning, and that's the
anyway.
Case. Did you see the picture of the sun on a Halloween
sun? Oh, that's wild.
That's a real picture.
Yeah, Sherry says, you know, it looks like, and I'm sure this is no accident why you put it up there.
Of course not.
That looks like a giant jack-o'-lantern.
It is. I don't know how much more it could look like one.
Mm-mm.
I mean, we've got symbolic ears, eyes, nose, mouth.
Everything.
It's all there, and it's all perfectly laid out. I think the main man is having a little fun with this.
I think so.
Or the main woman, however you want.
Whatever, whatever. The main team.
Yeah, that's really an interesting, a fascinating picture. It's on, go to Rents if you haven't seen it. Look at the top of the page. It's a NASA photo of the sun. And if that isn't eerie, I don't know what is. They talk about a blood moon, but that's right up there with it. Right.
Well, trick or treat, we certainly had a lot of solar interference or whatever it is, unless it's the goblins out already, but whacking our computers all over the place.
There. Yeah. Well, Monday, Tuesday, we tried to get, 2 days ago, tried to get Yochi Shimatsu from Thailand on, and everything was down there, and he said it was a CME, a solar event that had done it. They apparently turned some of the satellites off to protect them. I'm not sure how it all works, but
no,
we were not able to get him at all.
Well, so it's been weird. We've had it, of course, as I mentioned to you in an email. We've just had it since May. I mean, with things going on and off and storms that just never seem to stop. The crops are, of course, behind and sometimes destroyed for some farmers. It's just, we've had floods, and then we've had a month without a single drop of moisture, and then it pours, and then it's wind up to gusts up to 60 miles an hour. So what tiles we have left are kind of scattered more on the yard than they are on the roof. I mean, it's just been crazy.
Well, blowing tiles off a castle roof is
that's
windy.
And Fred and Leonard, you know, they're masters of so many trades, but they're not good at roofing.
I wouldn't think so.
No. They don't like to get up that high, you know.
I don't either. This wind thing, we had wind here. Usually we'll get maybe one big blow or two in November, December. But the trees are many of them still green here, and we had two very powerful winds. One clocked well over 100 miles an hour on top of a mountain near one here. Never been that high. I think we had winds through where I am at least 80. Many limbs came down, not large ones, but many. It bent one 60-foot tree over about 6 feet. It's still up, but it's definitely leaning in the wrong direction, as they say. And I have to do something about that at some point. This season is starting out early with rain. We had none last year. California is still
terrible.
A catastrophe. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's just very unusual. Everywhere you look, it's unusual. The weather is not like it used to be. When we were kids, the weather was more or less like a clock. You remember, you could count on it. Little kid clock, inner guidance, whatever. And in fall, you'd get rains in September and October, and then you'd get your little toes frostbitten in December and January. And I don't know, it's just not the same.
Oh, the photos we've seen of the drought there. It's just...
Yeah, well, that's what California used to look like before all the irrigation was put in, so it really isn't a surprise to Mother Nature, and that's just what it is. It was a quasi-desert, and then did you all remember the movie? I'm sure those listening in, many of you have seen the movie Chinatown. That's a very important historical document, as well as a great film. Explains how the water was brought into L.A. and how the San Fernando Valley, which was very desert-like, was made to bloom. And now,
that's a very interesting film, as you say. Because of that, I don't know how many people are riveted to see that, but the fact that it is the backdrop for all the nefarious deeds that occur in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And as you say, it really is a historical masterpiece if people will approach it that way.
Yeah. Okay, Fred and Leonard are still on the job. Very glad to hear that. They've been with us for many, many years.
Many years.
Yeah. So what we do usually is try to get caught up with Brad and Sherry's book output. What is new? What is about to be unleashed upon us? And what is on the drawing board? We have Christmas Miracles, of course, one of the great books ever. for the Christmas season, which will be here in about, oh, another week. What's going
the
on?
The season, not, the book is always here. The season the will be here in a week.
Yeah. No, it's silly. How fast. Stores are full of Christmas decorations. Full.
Yeah, we saw a truck pull up that was obviously full of Christmas decorations at one of the big department stores here.
Even Lowe's, the big hardware store, full of Christmas things already. Full. And they just kind of had to make a little extra effort to sneak in some Halloween stuff, which they're probably already discounted and gotten rid of by now. It's the day before, so we'll see. But what new books have come out?
Well, the new book is one that I collaborated with Nick Redfern.
Yes.
The Zombie Book, an Encyclopedia of the Undead. So that's our Halloween offering to the gods of Halloween, the gods of the harvest for this year.
Nasty Nick, the Texas outlaw.
The Texas outlaw with a British accent.
He just can't get rid of it. Funny guy.
So we have that on, that was, as I said, released for this year for Halloween, appropriately. And then Sherry and I are working on, we've had a great deal of success with our current book, which you have nicely advertised right on your page.
Oh,
right next to Brother Jim Mars's book.
Yeah.
And that is our one in our Real series. The sequel to the book will be Real Visitors. And we know we have a wide variety of visitors, or as we suggested in the book, Real Encounters, Different Dimensions and Otherworldly Beings, which came out a year ago, and as I say, is still doing extremely well. We suggested there that it might all be an expression of the other. In other words, an intelligence that maybe reflects the viewer, in that, you know, not to be joking too much about it, but, you know, who you are is what you get. You know, if you believe that the entities from your religious expression will appear to you and give you guidance, or if you believe in an alien who will do that, or if you believe a fairy who would do that, and it may be the same intelligence, just reflecting in different ways.
Could be.
Well, the next book, then, we really have some extraordinary research. We heard, in that book, Jeff, we heard from scientists and philosophers and hard-nosed researchers from literally all over the world who responded to that book saying, you know, I think you're really onto something, and here's the way I look at it. And we're just going to blend
it. There's your sequel.
Yeah, it is so much that we'll be blending in of some of the contributions that these people have made from their science. And I say they are, we're talking about Great Britain. We're talking about France. We're talking about Italy. We're talking about Spain. We're talking about the Ukraine. We're talking about South Korea. People who took the book very seriously, and very serious people who have done similar or allied research. And we're just really excited. And that book will be
very
next
dynamic.
Halloween.
Yeah, that's a good one. That'll be one worth looking forward to, as they all are. Just give us a real quick synopsis and overview. What's the bottom line? They're all beginning to come around now and say, yeah, there's a lot more to this game than we see.
Well, that can't help being pleasing to me. Please don't take this egotistically, but to see that concepts and ideas that I and then Sherry and myself have been working on, you know, decades ago, Now yep. some of the hard-nosed scientists are saying, hey, maybe you were on to something after all. Maybe we'll put in a little different vocabulary, but we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about that. And that has been so pleasing, so, you know, grateful to the creative muses to see so many people coming around. And not that, you know, the ego says, wow, I've really established something, but agreement, you know?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. That's wonderful news. Did any of them apologize for throwing rocks through your windows and things, laughing at you?
Well, what they've done is admit that they've been reading the books for like 30 years.
Quietly, under the covers.
Quietly, exactly, quietly. Yeah. And they will, you know, they're big enough to admit that, you know, that. But they were, you know, kind of like sneaking under the covers with a flashlight sort of thing.
Well, your books can put their grants in peril if they're not careful. They've got to be, they don't want to be carrying those books around campus.
No.
The academic community would not like it.
It's so gratifying to see so many of that community saying, maybe you're onto something after all.
You are more than onto it. I mean, it is what it is. And for me, and I know we share this view, for someone of great academic achievement to say, no, that's impossible.
Right.
No. That's not, it can't happen. I just don't understand that. Scientists are supposed to say, well, let's find out.
Yeah.
Let's keep looking.
Maybe.
That's
right. Let's look.
So,
let's look.
But when you hear the door slam, you kind of just have to go the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a little clip for tomorrow night. I thought I'd play this as a great one. This is the mirror scene from 1931. Think about 1931. That's what, almost 85 years ago now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dracula, the mirror scene, just part of it, 1931.
I'm sorry, Doctor. My visit was so ill-timed.
Not at all. On the contrary, it may prove to be most enlightening. In fact, before you go, you can be of definite service.
Anything I can do, I'm glad.
A moment ago, I stumbled upon a most amazing phenomenon. Something so incredible, I mistrust my own judgment. Look.
Knocks the glass to the ground with the mirror in it.
Right. I can see it as if it were yesterday.
And Van Helsing is looking at him, and he looks Lugosi back at everyone.
Dr. Seward, my humble apology. I dislike mirrors. Van Helsing will explain.
He certainly will.
The older I get, I'm beginning to dislike mirrors, too, but not for the same reason as the Count.
For one who has not lived even a single lifetime, you are a wise man, Van Helsing.
What a great line. And he walks out, makes his exit, not through the door, but out the balcony.
Right.
Totally.
No, that's a movie. Isn't it strange, you know, But you know, we've talked about this so often, you know, how we have that same attitude toward the classics, how you can sit and watch the original Dracula. Well, that of course would be another film, but the original Dracula that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And the original Frankenstein, the original werewolf, and in spite of some very awkward special effects and some very over-the-top acting, you could sit and watch them over and over again, because I think that black and white, I think maybe all horror films should be made in black and white. It just seems to get into the psyche and into the whole evolutionary aspect of what we fear in the night. Why do we fear something in the night? And somehow nice and clean, and no matter how they use that green screen and how wonderfully perfected the special effects are, how often do you sit and watch one of the great classics of today that is supposed to, you know, got great reviews and sold, it was big box office. Do you sit and watch those over and over every Halloween?
No.
I know maybe people do. Maybe it's just, but somehow it's almost ethereal and beyond the grasp of the film. It seems to touch our very evolutionary fiber of when we're sitting in the cave with the flickering fire, wondering what that noise is we just heard on the pathway.
I agree, and I think part of the reason, the movie Ed Wood, and I hope all of you have seen that, director Tim Burton shot it in black and white.
Right.
And it captured that 1950s spirit. Johnny Depp was magnificent in that film, one of his greater scripts. And it was based on a true story. And I don't know, the portrayal of Lugosi was superb. Was it Martin Balsam, I guess? Wasn't it? He played,
no, not Martin Balsam.
No.
Yeah.
Let me back up.
Oh, I can see him so clearly. My one steel trap memory is getting a little rusty. Oh, Mission Impossible. So many films. He was
Martin
a
Balsam.
Villain for so many years, and then he became a leading man.
Anyway, we'll get to him here. Hold on.
We'll get to him.
He was great. If you look at the actual movie clips and then look at the film clips of Lugosi, especially after he got out of the sanatorium to recover from his addiction, or try to, he was, I guess, addicted to heroin. Eerie, how close those two were. Just, and I think that I'm pretty sure that Martin, not Balsam, Landau.
Landau, there we go.
Martin Landau, didn't he get an Academy Award?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Well deserved. Should have gotten it. He was perfect in that film. Ed Wood, if you haven't seen it, 1994. Rent it. Look at it. It's a great film, especially if you're a little bit older and you remember any of those years at all. The representations of the people there were just ideal.
Back or if you're young and wanting to learn a good, solid cinematic background, it's required.
It's a walk through memory lane, even if you don't remember it. Back in just a couple minutes. Hold on. And it's our Halloween program a day early with Bradley, the Lord of the Manor. We're talking about things of the past that are of the present. In fact, they'll never go away. These great screen classics, Dracula, Frankenstein. Son of Frankenstein was another of my favorites. I especially like Basil Rathbone.
And yes.
The perfect yes. Dr. Frankenstein, in my view.
I think even though on one level it almost came facetious when Universal would put all their monsters together.
Oh, silly. It was a throwaway, and they'd put them in there with Abbott and Costello or something.
Right.
But they made
right.
money. People loved them.
But, you know, I was just going to say, Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein was really a great film.
It was,
in terms of cinema.
No, it was fun movie making at its best. And
right.
I agree.
Right.
They
right.
actually, Lou Costello played off of the monsters perfectly. He had a talent, and it was never more evident than in that film. I completely concur with you.
The other thing about the Universal grouping them together is, I mean, that was, well, let's face it, a very innocent time in the 40s. And also, it was a very horrible time with World War II going on. So,
first
I mean,
half
things
was,
had to really cut back. They had to get the most out of every scene. The European villages, you know, were all sound stages, but you didn't care because there was a story, you were captivated, and maybe Dracula comes back, you know, as Count something else this time, but we knew who he really was, you know, and it was, I don't know, of course, that's the period of my childhood, so, but I've seen him, of course, when I've adult with you know, the different books that I've written, the werewolf book and the vampire book and the zombie book. So, I mean, I draw upon those memories and that same sort of initial feeling and impulse and reaction that I had.
You and Sherry have produced the definitive books in this whole genre. There'll never be any that can come close. You have them covered, your werewolf book, all of them. Just spectacular books, and they're there.
Thank you. You have created
a legacy that, again, as long as there are people who care about these things, those books will be looked to for joy and fun and amusement and education in times when things aren't so good. It's just the way it should be, and you've done it, so I really do mean that.
Thank you.
We've been together for a long time, and those books are, to me, they're priceless. I've got my Steiger library is the most important grouping of books I have. So they're there.
Bless you, my man.
My problem is no problem. Here's another little clip from Bela Lugosi, the film 1931 Dracula.
Helsing.
He's calling Van Helsing.
Now that you have learned what you have learned, it would be well for you to return to your own country.
Go home.
I prefer to remain and protect those whom you would destroy.
Uh-oh.
You are too late. My blood now flows through her veins. She will live through the centuries to come, as I have lived.
Should you escape us, Dracula? We know how to save Miss Mina's soul, if not her life.
If she dies by day, but I shall see that she dies by night.
And I will have Carfax Abbey torn down stone by stone, excavated a mile around. I will find your earth box and drive that stake through your heart.
Yeah, that's not nice.
Come here.
It's just the way we do things here. Again, the interesting thing when you're talking about movie monsters, as you just did so wonderfully, but you know the vampire, you can easily see how from the earliest beginning, with the emphasis upon blood, the importance of blood religiously in every aspect of your life, and when they found out when the earliest human found out that when that liquid poured out of you, you weren't going to live. You know, it's become sacred. So the undead going after the blood of the living just seems, you know, to just be ready-made. But we know that there is, excuse me, there is an aspect of our society in which people emulate the vampire lifestyle.
Oh, they do.
And you know, these are some of them, you know, very earnest and scholarly people, and everyone has a right to put fang teeth in and so forth on Halloween or whenever they wish. But reason tells us that there aren't really vampires, because if those people with the vampire lifestyle were to drink a large amount of human blood, they would die. You know, the body cannot respond to that particular chemical makeup.
a wonderful way to come down with untold numbers of viral and bacterial diseases, hepatitis
exactly.
C, AIDS, Ebola, dare I say. And yes, of course, human blood is not Campbell's V8 juice.
No, so we have to say that that remains alive because of, you know, the atavistic yearning for some device, some action, some something one can do to have eternal life, you know, because eternal life is the goal of every human being, you know, mm-hmm. consciously or unconsciously.
Well, look at the Henry werewolf. Kissinger. He's 182 years old.
That's right. He's still going strong.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the werewolf, my particular favorite, we know that no one can really turn into a werewolf, though I've had people claim it and they're going to send me the tapes, however they never arrive. But that, of course, is the beast within each of us. And the wolf was the great teacher. We survived as a species because of our companionship with the wolf. I mean, we really were... This is what gave us the idea of hunting as a group and with creatures that had far better sense of smell than we did. So the wolf has just become like brother wolf, and to the American Indian, it's mother wolf. Mother wolf is the great teacher. Now that has been in Europe. That's all over where there are the canines.
Hmm.
The other monsters, you know, that we can see, the Frankenstein, may soon be very real, you know, as we're putting parts together and making humans. But the zombie, just to give a quick plug for the book, the zombie is the only real monster. There really are zombies, people who are kept in that state as slaves.
All true. All right, we will be right back as Brad and I continue on this night before Halloween. Okay, and we're back. Now, I was just thinking about the clip I played, 1931, with Bela Lugosi, and I should finish that clip with Van Helsing and he facing each other off. He says, "Come here," to Van Helsing, for those of you who don't remember this, and reaches out with his hand and begins to pull Van Helsing with a hand clasping his claw-like hand grabbing him through the air. Van Helsing slowly staggers toward him and then stops, not overcome by Lugosi's will, and begins to back away. And here's the end of that little clip.
"Your will is strong, Van Helsing. More wolfbane, more effective than wolfbane, Count."
And he pulls out a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And they hiss as the vampire turns and walks away quickly. The sign of the cross. It works every time. No matter how many sequels they've made of that film, they just can't. A remake, it's... The worst original is still better than the best copy. And there's only one original in the term of a film like that. Now, the same year, was it not the same year, 1931, Frankenstein came out? It was, 1931.
It was.
Frankenstein.
It was, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Here's the scene. We don't want to slight Boris Karloff.
No.
A great actor. Here's the scene where the monster comes walking through the door into the lab. And he slowly turns, and we get our look at his face. Oh my. Dr. Frankenstein runs up to him.
Come in. Come in.
He leads him across the room. Tells him to sit.
Sit down. Sit down. You see, it understands. Watch.
And he goes to open up the skylight. The point is, the operation was a success, Doctor, and the patient didn't die. What a face. Now, you got to, if you haven't seen the film, the original, you've got to take another look at it. It's remarkable.
If you're one of six people who haven't seen the original.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm sure that number is higher today, but for those of our age, you know, not to see it. I mean, to see it was a rite of passage. You know, you had to go. I can remember as a little boy, my mother telling me this, the story of the movie that she had seen, which was Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying how people fainted, people screamed, people got up and ran out of the theater. And that's astonishing to us today. But, you know, the same thing happened with The Exorcist, and that's in our modern generation where people had to leave, people fainted, and they had to have a staff. I was in Hawaii speaking of Halloween, with Sybil Leek doing some seminars when the movie first came out. And we had finished our seminars and so forth. We're headed back to the mainland, and they convinced us to stay another 2 or 3 days just to be on the radio and TV to calm people, to speak about the movie and possession and could it happen and so forth. You know, astonishing the effect that film can still have on individuals, even in our highly technological age. You know, it reaches in and gets all the little pieces of us that remain alive from the Middle Ages and before.
Well, I guess there is some connection back there. The problem with today's films, CGI, you mentioned green screen. It's well, it's sensory overload, and you become desensitized to not only violence and death, which is bad enough, but generally action. I mean, how many car crashes, how many incredible, unbelievable things can you see perfectly executed in the film, and where do you suspend belief anymore? I don't know.
It's
kind of all melding together.
Now, the new Godzilla, we haven't even seen it, because how can you be afraid of something that big? It's the same thing with the Transformers. How can you be afraid? I can see being afraid of a creaking door, and is that someone outside, or is there someone in the attic? And, you know, but something that huge, you know,
I didn't see it either.
No, I mean, it's too huge. How can you be afraid of something that large? I mean, you just say, okay, step on me, make it quick. You know, there's not the fear aspect, at least not for me, and obviously not for you.
No, I don't know. It's very hard to make a scary film now because it's all done so many times.
Slasher films, I mean, they keep returning. And even though, you know, Michael Myers and the Halloween trilogy or franchise, as I said, I think the theme of Halloween is one of the best for horror films.
Sure.
And that, I think, was an effective film. But to do it over and over, you know, it's like...
They're not still making them, are they? Haven't they given up on sequelizing these things?
No, there's... where did I just see? There's a new one of one of the franchises, they're working on a new one. And it's the part that I was always bemused by, you know, is as if they're made by very puritanical producers.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time you see teenagers making love without wedlock, they're going to die in the next scene. That punishment of sexual sin is going to be dealt with immediately, and it almost becomes facetious.
Well, they have to pay for their misdeeds. This brings us to our contest tonight, and after we do our news break at the top, we're going to take a look at our winners, our contestants, our entries in the Splash Art contest, and there were some very good ones again this year.
Yes, indeed, very good.
I must say that two in particular, I had a lot of trouble with this. They're both just superb, and I don't. When we announced the winners, the second place winner could have just as easily been the first place winner.
That's true.
I mean, I think it really was that close. So
that close.
We had one also submitted by a very young artist who we'll see that too. We're going to take a look at all of these as we continue in just a few minutes. Okay, now, corn and wind. There was corn out here as high as an elephant's eye. I don't know if it was GMO corn or not, but it was very, very tall, and the winds hit it, and it flattened out. Have you seen that? I've never seen corn flattened out.
Oh, yeah.
And not all of it, but a lot of it. The wind whipped its way right through it and kind of made pathways where these enormous stalks, and it knocked them right over.
And then, you know what we would have to do when that happens? They still do. We had to get a wagon, and we had to walk beside each roll and pick all the cobs, the corn.
Oh, you had to go take the ears by hand and get them out of there.
Do they still call them ears,
or are they cobs?
Ears, but they're on. It becomes a cob after the kernels are gone. So it's ears before that.
I see. Well, anyway, the ears, and I don't know how each ear has tassels, or what do you call it?
Right.
Silk coming out of the end of it when it'll turn brown after a certain point, and before that, it's kind of a golden silver. Very pretty.
Very pretty.
You're a farm boy. How do you know when an ear of corn is ripe?
I'm sorry, how do you know?
How do you know when an ear of corn is ripe? Can you tell by the tassels?
Well, they, of course, are brown when they're... Now, ripe, depending on if you mean to eat, sweet corn?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that, of course, you just take your fingernail or whatever
and give the kernel
a poke, and if it comes out nice and juicy, then you're going to eat it.
Okay, so the silk, is it called silk or tassels or what?
Silk, yeah.
Corn silk, all right. Well, it does turn brown, and I don't know if I thought that might be an indicator that it was...
Yeah, the tassel is kind of the sex organ of it. You know, you detassel or you tassel or you
this is a family
pollinate.
Program,
you use the sir. Tassel to pollinate the corn.
Tassels are something you see in a nightclub. Now, this...
but there's still tassels on corn. That's correct.
All right. Well, anyway, this was interesting for me. I haven't really... In high school, I was a future farmer. I did that for a year.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Thought that was going to be kind of a fun thing until I learned about animal husbandry with its very violent divorce scene at the end.
Yeah, well,
as in
when you learned
slaughterhouse.
About, no, when no. you learned about woodies and surfing, that's when it started to change for you.
No, that's right. That too. Okay, we'll be back in a few minutes. Hang on, and then we'll take a look at our Splash Art entries with you. You're welcome to walk along. Just go to rents.com and take a look. On the left column, you'll see the gateway to the contest, and we'll do that with Brad in just a few.